Zeus and a few other things, and of course the Faust legend. But it's quintessentially British. And so Sebastian had to be British. We all decided he had to be British, as did CL, as did everyone else in the show that was from Britain. And so I thought, well, let's just do this. We'll make him very proper and very much a butler with that very silky, smooth tone, that sort of Jeremy Irons. And it just worked. And I fall into that voice very easily, and I love it. And it's a charming voice. It sounds very egocentric to say that of my own voice, but I think it's not my voice so much as that accent. I think the British accent is one that American ears can't help but listen to and just go, oh, I know I can't. And I think Sebastian needed that because of the role he played in the grand scheme of things. I mean, he is, at the end of the day, not actually a British butler. He is a demon in the guise of a British butler. And as a demon, his objective is to eat souls. And like any predator, he's not going to get very far if he is off-putting. So he needs to be charming and inviting and very, you know, comforting. Otherwise, he's not going to get very close to his prey. And that's largely how the voice was arrived at. And I have since used it so much that it's just become part of me. I don't know what that means to say, that a demon has just become part of me. But, you know, I'm okay with that.
Somebody find me an exorcist. But what about, I mean, you say it's a part of you. I mean, I guess that would be your prim and proper man of manners side. So what part of your personality do you think France came from?
The French side. Not really. France is a really fun character because I'm fascinated, and I always have been fascinated by characters whose job it is, in the context of the show, is to sort of walk into a room, devastate with a word, and then leave. I love that. They're kind of the Rodney Dangerfields of Caddyshack, you know, like those sorts of characters are hysterically fun to play. And France was very much written that way in the Japanese and adapted by the remarkably hilarious Jamie Markey that way in the English scripts. And I just ran with it. I also happened to be able to do a really over-the-top French accent because I'm relatively fluent in French. And so she made all these end jokes for me, and I just sort of was able to let loose. I mean, I was able to act in a way that I would never act in real life, of course. You'd never get away with any of that stuff. But again, I'm in the booth, and I'm being paid to, you know, just unleash and become this ridiculous, over-the-top personification of a country. But that's kind of part of the appeal of acting, is that I don't know that, of course, France and that character, as all characters, you know, I've played are a part of me, but they're not parts of me I get to explore or get the chance to explore in day to day life. So getting, you know, having the opportunity to sort of just let my hair down, so to speak, is awesome. And that's where France came from. France was kind of a natural outcropping of the need to not be Sebastian after being Sebastian for a long time. I'm like, I want to do something that's improper, and I want to do something that's loud, and I want to do something obnoxious. And and not that France is obnoxious in that sense. I love him, but he's lovably obnoxious. That's what he is. So it was just great to get to do that, I think. That's largely where France comes from.
All right. So I guess we could say that Sebastian was your venom, France your carnage. So would you say that Dr. Gel is your toxin?
I have a great deal of respect for Dr. Gel. He has a brilliant mind. And we have to stop for a moment and imagine the sort of challenges that beset a brilliant ape who dresses like he does. I mean, you know, he can't have had an easy life.
Straight out of the 70s.
Right. He's sort of dressed like a weird pimp version of Evel Knievel, and it's awesome. I love it. I love the design of that show. Space Dandy is one of the zaniest, most brilliant things I've ever gotten to work on. And I feel there was a time in the course of working on it that we all sort of felt like, wow, I kind of feel like my entire career has been leading up to this portrayal of an evil giant space ape genius in a pimp outfit and a purple wig and in platform shoes. But I love that character. He was written, again, Jamie Markey and Patrick Seitz worked on the adaptive scripts for that show. under really, really strange restrictions because we were simuldubbing, meaning that as writers, they had to work on the show, and as actors, we had to record the show more or less in tandem with the Japanese production so that it would come out in Japanese and in America roughly on the same at the same time. That's challenging for an adaptive writer because they don't have access to the entirety of the original creator's vision yet because they're still in the process of making it. And that can be, you know, that's tricky. Not only to, and I just want to kind of shout out to the script writers on that show, Jamie and Patrick, who are both dear, dear friends of mine, and who are sublime writers, particularly when it comes to comedy and more sort of high level intelligent comedy like Dandy is, and it really is. But having to work on a show and adapt a show and make it funny, is hard enough, but having to do so on a show like Dandy, which is so anarchistic, so visionarily insane, and also having to work under the restrictions of working on an episode per week as it comes out, that's hard. I cannot begin to fathom how they did it as well as they did. But getting to be part of it in some small way, playing the giant space ape, was awesome, especially because I was hunting down Ian Sinclair, who is one of my best friends, and in a weird way, Jill and Dandy's relationship is reflective of mine and Ian's.
Ambiguously hostile.
Yes. Well, you see, we're often out for the same roles. You see, because Ian's a much more talented actor than I am, and I have a certain niche selection of characters that I can play that are within my wheelhouse, but Ian can damn near do everything. So whenever he gets a role and I don't, I'm always like, damn it, Dandy, I'll get you next time.
Hey, that's showbiz, folks.
Yes, it is.
But isn't it also interesting? I mean, you said Cowboy Bebop was the thing that got you back into anime. I mean, being that Space Dandy was from the folks that brought us Cowboy Bebop, I mean, what do you think about that especially?
Oh, I was thrilled. I mean, my God, it's really like getting to live the dream. I've gotten to go back and be part of all these shows that were benchmarks in the industry that were around before I became a voice actor. You know, I got to be involved in Dragon Ball Kai as a writer and as Zarbon, and that was awesome because I didn't get to be part of the original run of Dragon Ball because it was before my time as a voice actor. I've got to go back and be part of the Pokemon universe. I did some recording in New York a few years ago on both one of the movies and a couple of the episodes, and now I've gotten to work on something by the same studio that brought us Cowboy Bebop. I mean, it's pretty cool, and it kind of feels like I'm living a dream that I suspect any moment I'll be pinched awake from. Though I hope that's not the case.
And I mean, on the, I mean, do you think also, and this is maybe I see it more with Doro than any of the others, although Sebastian being British, you know, does that. You know, you said in some recent interviews and some panels at a couple of recent cons that, you know, you're very Shakespearean in your way of acting and that you're going to bring Shakespeare. And you, I mean, do you think that through Doro, especially, or through Sebastian, or any of the others, are you bringing Shakespeare to anime?
Well, I don't know that I don't know that Shakespearean acting is necessarily what I do. I'm much more a Chekhovian actor, if that means anything to anyone. But when it comes to language and the way that characters use language, in a way that gives us the audience a brief glimpse into who they are as people. Shakespeare was really the first writer, and to this day, I think still the best, that really kind of created that zeitgeist, that idea that language can be used to reveal characters, the human characters, real people, even if they're fantastical. But real people with real emotions who follow the many, many ooey-gooey vicissitudes of what it is to be human because, you know, we're complex. We contradict ourselves. We often change on account of overhearing what we ourselves have just said. That's everywhere present in Shakespeare. He largely invented that trope. So, whenever I write, certainly as an adaptive writer, I try to have a sort of Shakespearean ear. I mean, such as I can, because I am no Shakespeare. but I'm very much in debt to that style of writing. I mean, when you get past all the sort of outward trappings that to most people make Shakespeare what he is, you know, the iambic pentameter, the Elizabethan English, all this, what you have is this bevy of unique characters, at least over 200 unique characters that had never, whose like had never appeared anywhere before, and that we've been imitating ever since. And so I always sort of go back to Shakespeare in my writing. In my acting, I'm very different though. Shakespeare for me doesn't entail an acting style. It entails a writing style. Acting Shakespeare, you know, there is no Shakespearean. I mean, Shakespeare was not an acting coach. At least, as far as we know. But when it comes to acting in general, like there are many other things I use. So I, as a writer, as an actor, I sort of, to put it in very, very highfalutin terms, I realize, but as an actor, I kind of feel that it's a great privilege to get to tell someone else's story. And it's a great honor to sort of worship at the altar of language in doing so. And Shakespeare is the person, the genius that forged that altar. And so I continue to visit.